You know, there's a very specific circle of hell reserved for people who think, I'll just knock this project out this weekend.
Oh, yeah. The classic simple project fallacy. It's like the siren song of the whole DIY world.
Completely. It's that huge Dunning-Kruger spike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got the tools, you have the confidence, and you have absolutely no idea what you're actually walking into.
Right. Which perfectly sets up what we're looking at today.
Exactly. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are breaking down a really fascinating piece of source material. It's basically a candid confession titled, My DIY Electrical Panel Build Story. And for those of you listening who already live in the world of engineering or construction, you probably know this story in your bones.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a builder who wants to put together a low voltage control panel for his workshop. And he thinks, you know, get a metal box, slap in some din rail, wire it up, lights go on. Done.
Yeah, and instead of a quick weekend job, he finds himself staring straight into the abyss of global compliance standards. I mean, he goes from just needing a box to navigating this massive alphabet soup. IEC, UL, NEC, CE, IE6.
It's a lot. But here's the thing, and this is why I really love this source for our deep dive today. It's not some dry, boring walkthrough of the code.
No, not at all.
It's a narrative of near misses. The mission here isn't to just read the rulebook to you. We all have the PDFs for that. We're exploring the central tension the author faced.
Yeah.
That massive, dangerous gap between making something work.
Making electrons flow.
Right. Making the motor spin versus making something actually safe.
And that is such a critical distinction because in electrical engineering, functionality is actually the easy part. Yeah. You can wire a panel that works perfectly, you know, right up until the exact moment it burns the building down.
Which is terrifying.
It is.
Yeah.
The author's journey is really about realizing that standards aren't just paperwork or bureaucracy. They are physical reality. They're physics.
Right.
They dictate how heat moves, how wire bends under stress, and what actually happens when a short circuit hits a bus bar.
So let's get right into that physics, actually. Mm-hmm. Because the very first wall he hit was what he calls the any metal box myth.
Oh, yeah.
And I think even seasoned pros have this thought occasionally. Like, it's just an enclosure. If the parts fit inside, we're golden.
Yeah, it's the storage container mentality. You see a 500 millimeter box, you have 400 millimeters of components, and you just think, great, plenty of room.
But then he ran headfirst into IEC 61439, which is the global standard for low-voltage switchgear.
Right.
And suddenly, that box wasn't just a container anymore.
No, it became a thermal system. And this is where so many people get tripped up. IEC 61439 doesn't just care about physical clearance. It actively demands that you calculate temperature rise.
Because everything gets hot.
Exactly. Every breaker, every single contactor, even every inch of wire is a heat source. If you pack them in super tight just to save space, which was his original plan. By the way, you don't have a control panel. You've built an oven.
He actually had to completely scrap his first design, didn't he?
He did. He realized the heat dissipation calculations meant he needed a significantly larger enclosure. Or he had to add forced ventilation.
Which is really the difference between a hobbyist and a professional designer right there. A hobbyist optimizes for space or cost. But a professional has to optimize for thermal dynamics. If you don't derate your equipment for the ambient temperature inside that specific box, you're literally building a ticking time bomb.
Exactly. And speaking of IEC 61439, he fell into another classic trap, thinking the standard is just a single book.
Oh, right. I've seen this confusion so many times. People go online looking for the IEC standard, not realizing it's more like a whole library.
It's the part one versus part two struggle. IEC 61431 is just the general rules. It's essentially the dictionary.
Right.
It defines terms like creepage distance and rated diversity factor. But you cannot build a panel with just part one. You actually need the specific product standard.
And in his case, that was part two, power switch gear and control gear.
Right. They're a package deal. You have to read them simultaneously. Part one gives you the vocabulary, but part two gives you the grammar.
I like that analogy.
Yeah, if you just read the general rules, you might think you're totally compliant, but you'll completely miss the specific testing requirements for power distribution. It's like trying to learn Spanish by only reading a Spanish-English dictionary.
Now, probably the most visceral example of physics versus assumption in this whole source has to be the bus bar incident. We definitely need to talk about the flexing bus bar.
Oh, this is such a great war story. So he's using these tinned copper flat bars for his main power distribution, and he does a dry fit, assembling it all without power.
And it feels rock solid to him. Mechanically, it's stiff.
Right, and his intuition is screaming, hey, if it doesn't wiggle when I pull on it with my hand, it's safe.
But the standard, Going back to IEC 61439 requires you to design for fault stress, not just sitting there.
Exactly. We aren't talking about the copper bar holding its own weight. We are talking about what happens during a worst-case scenario short circuit. When a massive fault current flows through those bars, it generates immense magnetic fields.
And those fields create actual physical force.
Electrodynamic force. Force that actively tries to push the bars apart or pull them together violently.
And he actually simulated this force, right? Well, not even the full fall force, just the torque of tightening a bolt.
He did. He simulated the cable pull and the tightening force, and he watched those thick copper bars visibly bow.
Which is terrifying, because if that happens during a fault, the bars can touch.
They touch, they cause an arc flash, or they literally rip themselves right off the insulators. He had this massive realization that stiff enough for my hand is absolutely not stiff enough for 20,000 amps.
So he had to go back and redesign the support structure completely.
Yeah.
Adding proper insulating supports, tightening the spacing, building for the catastrophe, not just a steady state.
And that right there is the fundamental engineering mindset shift.
That shift also heavily applied to his testing phase. He admits he was totally a member of the Does It Beep Club. You know what I mean? Grab the multimeter, touch the probe.
It beeps.
Exactly. Continuity's good, let's fire it up.
The beep test is the false confidence of the entire industry. It tells you that copper touches copper. That's it. It does not tell you a thing about insulation resistance or dielectric strength or your creepage distances.
So he moved to a much more professional verification mindset, design verification, and routine verification.
Which the standard mandates.
Right.
He created this rigorous checklist, torque checks, clearance checks, protective bonding continuity, and you know the scary part.
He actually found mistakes.
He found real mistakes. A neutral terminal that was mislabeled, and two breaker frames that were the wrong physical size, and he only caught those because he followed the strict checklist, not because he just stepped back and checked his work.
Let's pivot slightly to the North American side of things, because our author decides to punish himself even further by looking at UL standards. And this is where we run into the massive switchboard versus panel confusion.
The classic battle of UL 891 versus UL 508A.
It's a distinction that trips up so many people.
Hmm.
Because visually, if you just look at them, they can look identical. Big metal cabinet, breakers inside. But the code treats them as entirely different animals.
They really are. UL 891 is for switchboards. This is typically your service entrance equipment, main power distribution, usually rated 1,000 volt or less.
The heavy hitters.
Right. And these are often dead front, meaning the design ensures you absolutely cannot touch live parts from the operating side under any circumstances.
Whereas UL 508A is for industrial control panels. So think factory automation, machinery brains, relays, PLCs.
Exactly. The author was building a control enclosure for his workshop, but he kept referring to it as a switchboard in all his early documentation.
Which seems like a minor semantic error until you realize that leads to an instantly failed inspection.
Instantly. If you call an inspector out to look at a UL 891 switchboard, and they walk up and see a UL 508A control panel, they just pack up their clipboard and leave. You are literally using the wrong rule book.
He also mentioned seeing some rumors on internet forums, which, side note to you listening, please never get your code advice from Reddit, but he saw a rumor that UL 508A was being replaced.
Yeah, internet forums are basically a graveyard of bad engineering advice. No, UL 508A is not dead. It hasn't been replaced. It's arguably the most active standard in the industrial world right now. It goes through revisions, sure, but it is not going anywhere.
Good to clarify.
Oh, yeah.
But the biggest trap he found with UL wasn't actually the definition. It was the SCCR.
Yeah.
The short circuit current rating. He calls this the professional hardware amateur paperwork trap.
Oh, this is a painful lesson for a lot of builders. He went out and bought top-tier components, Schneider, Phoenix Contact, the really good stuff.
Right.
And he assumed that because he bought rated parts, his whole panel was automatically rated.
But that is not how the math works at all.
Not even close. SCCR follows the weakest link principle. You can have a massive main breaker rated for 65,000 amps interrupt capacity, 65 kA. But if you have just one single power distribution block downstream that is only rated for 5 kA...
Then your entire panel is a 5 kA panel.
Exactly. The whole system drops to the lowest rating. And in an industrial setting, a 5 kA rating is often completely useless. You legally cannot install it.
So he had this beautiful looking panel. Clean wiring, zip ties, perfectly spaced.
Yeah.
But without the proper documentation and the SCCR logic, it was essentially a giant paperweight.
It really reinforces the reality that neat wiring does not equal a compliant panel. You can be an absolute artist with the wire strippers, but if you fail the paperwork, you fail the build. The paperwork is the engineering.
So true. All right, so we've covered the box with UL, the design with IEC. Now we have to actually install this thing. And this brings us to the National Electrical Code, the NEC. This section of the source actually made me sweat a little bit because he details a near miss with neutral bonding that is honestly the classic sub-panel killer.
It is easily the most common and the most dangerous mistake in residential and light commercial wiring.
So let's break this down clearly for the listeners. In your main service panel, the one attached to your meter, your neutral, the grounded conductor and your ground, the equipment grounding conductor are bonded. They're physically connected.
Correct. That is the one single place they should ever meet.
But our author was building a subpanel.
Right. And in a subpanel, the neutral and the ground must be rigorously isolated. If you bond them in a subpanel, if you forget and leave that little green bonding screw sitting in the neutral bar, you create a parallel path for return current.
Meaning the electricity isn't just going back on the normal white wire.
It's coming back on the ground wire. It's coming back on the conduit itself. It's coming back on the metal casing of the panel. You have effectively electrified your safety enclosure.
Wow.
So if you touch that panel and you happen to be a better path to ground than the conduit is, you become the conductor.
And the author almost left that screw in. It was just a remnant from a previous setup he had.
He caught it because of a new checklist protocol based on NEC 250.24A. But honestly, he really caught it because he adopted a point and call protocol.
I love this method so much. He physically points at the neutral bar and says out loud, "Is it floating? Is the screw gone?"
It feels silly to stand in a room and talk to yourself, but it works. It forces the human brain to switch out of assumption mode and into active observation mode.
Definitely. He also ran into an interesting conflict between security and accessibility, referencing NEC 240.24. Initially, he wanted to hide his overcurrent protective devices, the breakers behind a cover that required tools to open.
Because it feels safer, right? Keep unqualified people away from the dangerous bits.
Exactly. But it fails completely for emergency response. The code requires breakers to be readily accessible.
Which means absolutely no tools.
No screwdrivers, no hunting for keys.
Because if that machine starts smoking or someone is getting shocked, the operator needs to be able to kill the power instantly. In that specific moment, the risk of unauthorized access is much lower than the risk of the building burning down.
So he had to go back and reorganize the front layout, exposing the breaker toggle so anyone can flip them, while still keeping the live wire terminals safely hidden behind the dead front.
It's a really delicate balance, but it's what the code demands.
He also brought up the 2023 NEC updates regarding GFCI.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a great lesson in why you can never trust your memory. He was probably operating on knowledge from the 2017 or maybe 2020 cycle.
And the code moves fast. NEC 210.8D in the 2023 cycle was a massive game changer. It used to just be about wet locations, sinks, bathrooms, outdoors.
Right.
But now it's about specific appliances, regardless of where they are located. Dishwashers, electric ranges, wall ovens, clothes dryers, microwave ovens, they all require classy GFCI protection now.
That is a huge shift. If you are just wiring things up from memory the way you did 5 years ago, you are actively building a code violation.
Precisely. The code is a living, breathing document. Saying, "I've always done it this way," is never a valid defense during an inspection.
One last NEC detail I wanted to touch on because I thought it was super smart. The busbar bonding path. He realized he was so focused on current capacity, like, can this copper carry 100 amps, that he forgot to ask about the fault path.
This ties right back into our bonding discussion. If a live wire shakes loose and touches the inside of the metal door, what happens?
Right.
If the door has a solid, low resistance path back to the main ground, the breaker trips instantly. Boom, it's safe.
But if the door is just swinging on painted hinges,
and there's no dedicated bonding jumper, then the door just sits there, energized at 120 or 240 volts, just silently waiting for someone to grab the handle.
So he added a specific bond path continuity test to verify that every single piece of metal, the door, the gland plate, the DTN rail, all had continuity straight back to ground.
That is a professional catch.
All right, final segment. The author, having survived the NEC, starts dreaming a little bigger. He thinks, hey, maybe I could sell this design kit internationally. And he runs headfirst into the European and international standards, CE and ISEX.
And this is where the DIY dream essentially hits an absolute brick wall.
Let's talk about CE marking first. I think the general public sees that little CE logo on the back of their phone, charger, or laptop and thinks, oh, the European government tested this and gave it a quality badge.
That is easily the single biggest misconception in global trade. CE is not a certification that someone grants you. It is a self-declaration.
Wait, really? You just say, I'm good, and slap the sticker on yourself?
Essentially, yes. But, and it is a massive legally binding but, by putting that sticker on your product, you are claiming that you hold all the evidence to prove it's safe. You, the manufacturer, are wholly responsible for the technical file.
And what actually goes into that technical file? It's not just a wiring schematic.
Oh, not at all. It's a massive dossier. It requires a full risk assessment, a declaration of conformity, listing every single directive you meet, engineering calculations, independent test reports, user manuals translated into the local language of the market. The author realized he had a pretty panel, but zero revision history and no formal documentation. In the CE mindset, the physical hardware is only half the product. The hardware plus the technical file equals the product. Without the file, your panel doesn't legally exist.
So he smartly backed away from that idea. But the real do not enter sign came when he looked at IE6.
Explosive atmosphere.
Yeah, he had a friend ask him to consider a job that involved gas zones.
And this is where he very correctly drew the hard line. Unlike CE, where you can self-declare for a lot of standard equipment, IE6 involves mandatory, independent third-party oversight.
It's not DIY anymore.
Absolutely not. You need quality assessment reports, or QARs. You need a certified lab to physically test your equipment. And they often test it by literally trying to blow it up inside a chamber to prove that your enclosure won't ignite the surrounding atmosphere.
You definitely can't do that in a residential garage.
You cannot. The liability is infinite. If you build a DIY panel for a hazardous location and it sparks...
It's not just a small fire, it's a crater.
Correct. So his new rule is incredibly simple. If the words flammable vapor or dust hazard appear anywhere in the spec, he politely declines the prototype.
Smart man. Honestly, knowing what you don't know is probably the most important safety tool any of us have.
It is the absolute foundation of professional engineering.
So, bringing this all together, the author started with a very casual weekend project mindset, and he ended up with a profound respect for process discipline.
He really did. He stopped chasing the finished product, and he started respecting the process itself.
He actually shares his final mental checklist for any new project he takes on now. It's three questions. Which standard family applies, which edition of that standard am I looking at, and what documentation proves I actually met it.
It's a simple list, but it's bulletproof. And I'd add one more insight he had that I think is brilliant. Standards are just the accumulated wisdom of failures.
I really love that framing.
It's true. Every paragraph in the NEC, every clause in IEC 61439, it exists because somewhere in history, something went terribly wrong. Someone lost a lot of money, a factory burned down, or somebody got hurt. When you read the code, you aren't reading arbitrary bureaucratic rules. You are reading a history book of things we desperately don't want to repeat.
That puts a completely different spin on what we usually consider boring documentation. The author ultimately concludes that slowing down at the standard stage is actually the fastest path to a working result.
Because you don't have to rebuild it three times. Measure twice, cut once applies just as much to the code book as it does to a piece of lumber.
Exactly. So here is the provocative thought I want to leave you, our listener, with today. Think about your own projects, whether you're wiring a control panel, writing a piece of software, or managing a construction site. Are you looking at the documentation as just red tape, just a boring delay you have to cut through to get to the real work? Or do you recognize that the documentation is the actual blueprint for safety?
The most dangerous phrase in any technical field is, I think this is how it works. The standards know how it works. You have to trust them.
A huge thank you to the author of this source for sharing such a candid look at his own failures. That is how we all learn and get better. And thank you to everyone for joining us on this deep dive. Check your bonds, read the manual, and stay safe out there.
Take care, everyone.